This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. He's on vacation till Thursday. And by the way, I don't have a plan to play any pre-recorded things during this show, but we're hoping that around 4:45 or so that we're going to get a call from the majority leader in the House, who's, of course, the Democrats are the majority. Ryan Winkler, Representative Ryan Winkler, said he was going to call us and give us an update on what's going on in the Minnesota legislature. There's a lot going on. Things are changing very – just constantly in these last few days before will the government shut down or will it not? But what I want to talk about is – there's a new invention in England that that was also partially developed by Cargill, where they have masks for cows that can basically absorb the methane that comes out of their mouths when they burp and breathe. So I'd like to spend the next 45 minutes talking about that. Brett, what do you got on it? Anything?
Oh, man, 45 minutes on that. I'll take it. Riveting.
Okay, now that's – I'm pretty much done. It's pretty – it's actually a pretty interesting story, and it shows you just how hard companies like Cargill are working on climate change issues because they know that – well, and you know, the way we're starting to hear more and more about the way that America eats. You know, climate change, the way we raise cows, for instance. This is both dairy cows and other cows that, you know, slaughter cows. What do they call them? I don't know. Anyway, the pollution that comes just from methane, from things like that, and the way that they're fed, they've been working on, you know, different kinds of foods to make their methane less and all this. Anyway, it just goes to show you how serious climate change is getting because the huge companies like the oil companies and companies like Cargill are spending a lot of time and effort and money to try and find solutions. So that's about all the time we need to spend on the cow masks. So let's go to UFOs. So we only have about 43 minutes left now. So I think we can fill that. UFOs, by the way, are now called UAPs. It used to be unidentified flying objects, and now it's unidentified aerial phenomena. And I'm not sure why they did that. Maybe just because now it wanted the government would like to talk about it in an official capacity, so they would like to just not be saying, "Oh yeah, you know," because UFOs for 70 years has been tried to be passed off as only being seen by kooky people. But now there was a report issued. It was released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. And it said it was meant to shed light on the mystery of dozens of actually more than 100 flying objects spotted between 2004 and 2021. But instead, it said it couldn't find adequate data to put any of them except for one to rest. They figured out one of them was a deflated balloon of some sort. So out of 144 cases – one of them they could explain. The other 143, they're like, yeah, I don't know what that was. We know it's not Russia. We know it's not China. We know it's not the United States. Any kind of military apparatus or experimental airplanes or flying craft. And, of course, you know, I don't know if they might be trying to cover up a secret in doing that because they've done that before too. But now they've never done it in this manner where they say, yeah, we can't explain it. So, yeah, have at it. Ufologists. So that's pretty interesting. It of course isn't a surprise to pretty much anybody. You know, most Americans believe that UFOs exist, but they've always known that the government – well, the government has its reasons to not talk about it because maybe some of it is actually experimental military craft that we're working on. And, of course, we don't want to announce that. So we say, well, we don't know what it is. So, yeah, it remains unidentified, an unidentified aerial phenomena now. But so it's kind of the same as it always was. But to me, it feels like the Pentagon and the American government kind of wants to be rid of the accusation that they're covering up. So I think they released this and said, hey, look, we investigated 144 cases very thoroughly, and we told you we don't know what they are. So when the UFOs actually come and land, they'll say, we told you we didn't know what they were. We weren't trying to cover it up. We looked into them, and we told you, yeah, I agree with you. It's unidentified. You know, that's my theory because, of course, I can't wait for them to land. I want to hear what they have to say. I want to go for a ride. How much would you pay to go for a ride on a unidentified aerial phenomena type of vehicle?
Hopefully less than Elon Musk's little project.
Yeah, what's his name? The other guy who's going to space and is paying, I don't know.
Who is the other guy that's called? I'm blanking on his name too.
Well, he's the owner of Amazon.
Oh, Bezos. Like,
yes.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. And he's going to space and he's paying. I think he's bringing his friend and he's paying a certain amount for his friend. I bet $100 that the UAP pilots would charge less. Just to ridicule Bezos. So, yeah, good start to a political show. So let's go from UFOs. I wanted to talk about what's going on actually at the legislature. And the big thing right now is, of course, the public safety bills. And there are good and bad things happening, but it's looking more and more like it's predictable. The Democrats seem to be trying to figure out a way to change how we police and to create actual better public safety, because obviously it is not working now. And it looks like the Republicans are basically just kind of sticking up for the law enforcement and unions of the police. Now, that when I say it that way, I don't mean that the DFL is against police. They're not. And for Paul Gazelka's quote, he's got a couple quotes today. One of them is, we made a commitment. This is actually from yesterday. I think he made it again today, though, that we made it a commitment to not take any anti-police measures or make it harder for law enforcement to keep people safe. And then he says, you know, so we kept our promise. And I would just like somebody to follow up and say, okay, how is it then that the leader of your party in Washington, D.C., Kevin Murphy, am I getting his name right?
Oh, McCarthy.
McCarthy, yeah. Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader in the House, who's basically the top elected leader of the party in the House side at least. He refused to meet with a Capitol policeman for months, and then he finally met with him, and the Capitol policeman said, you know, could you at least denounce the Republican, your Republican colleagues who voted against recognizing us for being law enforcement, trying to keep you safe, saving your life that day? And McCarthy refused to. And I would like to ask how that makes it easier for police to do their jobs or how that's not anti-police. I just really think that if you're a Republican right now at any level, you do not have the right or ability that you are sticking up, you know, for the police. Right now, it's very clear that your party is the anti-police party. Democrats are trying to do things like, let's say that police shouldn't pull you over because your tabs are expired, or maybe one of your taillights doesn't work, you know? And then once we get the window open, you know, let's see what kind of person you are. Maybe let's check out the color of your skin. And then let's say look you up for an arrest warrant or something like that. And then if there's an arrest warrant, let's just pull our guns on you and get you out and hold you down. And, you know, there have been some really atrocious stories coming out about police brutality going on for years, even just in Minneapolis. And you know that we don't know the tip of the iceberg. We don't know the tip of the iceberg on these stories. And so it's a very touchy subject. And, of course, in the compromises that were made between the Republicans and the DFL in this bill that's going on at least right now, things seem to still be in flux. But it's known as the BIPOC caucus in the House, or the DFL BIPOC caucus. It's Black Indigenous People of Color. That's what BIPOC. They came out really strong against Governor Walz, basically. It's not necessarily Governor Walz that made the compromises. It's other legislators and the people who are trying to negotiate with the Republicans, who are just, you know, still kind of basically sort of filibustering, you know, absolutely refusing to give up certain things and threatening to shut the state down. So talks are remaining going on, but at the moment there are some compromises that the BIPOC caucus is really angry about, and they confronted, not in person but in a press conference, they confronted Governor Walz. And, of course, Governor Walz was asked about it, and his answer was, oh, absolutely. I completely agree with them. This is not enough, but it's all we're going to get through this Republican Senate right now. So basically, yeah, the BIPOC caucus needs to turn their ire toward the Republicans. You know, of course they are. Of course they are doing that. But we always need to remember that when the Republicans are being just atrocious, maniacal villains in this story, if the DFL does something to make a compromise so that the state doesn't shut down and they give up something but they keep something else, we need to keep going after the GOP. We shouldn't go after the governor. I'm not criticizing the BIPOC caucus at all. I understand, and of course the governor himself, I agree with the BIPOC caucus, as does the governor. So, but we just really need to remember where we need to focus our attention. Some of the details that I think it's not just the BIPOC caucus, it's the overwhelming majority of Minnesotans agree with what I just described about having the and here's something that would make the police's job a lot more easy as well. The leader, Gazelka, said, you know, they want to make policing as easy as possible. It would make it a lot easier for police if they didn't have to run around pulling people over for minor things like your tabs being expired. I remember I was in Germany 32 years ago, and on the Autobahn I was riding with a friend of mine. But then you would go to parts of the Autobahn that all of a sudden there would be a speed limit, and there were cameras. And he knew there was a big kind of flash. And he said, oh, now I'm going to get a ticket. And I'm like, what? And he said, oh, yeah, they just took a picture of my license plate and I was speeding. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. you know, too bad you're getting a ticket. But to not have –
30-some years ago they did that?
Yeah, that was 1989. I was in Germany and they were doing that then, you know. I don't know. Absolutely no police on the beat involvement. It just goes through the measures and, you know, he got a ticket and he had to pay it. And say you could do the same thing with expired tabs. I mean, especially nowadays where there's cameras everywhere anyway, you know, there are I think, pretty easy to find ideas on how to make it so that the police don't need to do that type of thing. The police need to be free for serious crimes that are going on, you know. Another thing that would make policing easier would be to have more robust support for mental illness. Well, I want to talk a little bit about how that was broken down by the Republicans. So they cause a problem and then they blame the problem on the Democrats and then they try and solve problems that aren't there yet. That's – I don't know. That seems to be what they've been doing for a long time. But when we come back, I'm going to tell you about a couple – just a little bit more detail about what's going on with police measures. But and you can give me a call at 952-946-6205. Things are moving so fast. If you've heard anything that's going on down there, you know, give me a call and let me know at 952-946-6205. I'm Todd Mickelson at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. That was me rapping. It's a kind of radio guy rapping.
Oh, yeah.
To the hop, to the hit, biggity hop. Remember that one? It was like the very first rap song. It was kind of very much like that. It was like, hey, I'm Mike, and I'm here to say, well. Anyway. So talking about what's going on down at the legislature, we're talking about the public safety bill, which of course it was kind of everyone knew this was going to be the most difficult part of the whole legislative session. Of course, the Republicans put it off and passed the legislative session and then now are putting it off until the very last moments of the I meant to say regular session. Now we're in the special session. And, of course, we're talking about it still. It's still in flux. It is now Monday evening, and we have until Wednesday at midnight to make sure that all of the budget bills are passed. Otherwise, the state shuts down. Some of the details that I've been to the Capitol to testify on things many times. I have lined up other people to do so and walked them through how to do it. And this isn't that long ago. I started doing that about 7 years ago or so. And back then it seemed like it meant something. You would go in and you would have your time. You know, we would be talking about something like paid family and medical leave, which is kind of funny. We're still talking about paid family and medical leave. By the time we get it done, we're going to have passed into a different dimension or something. It's kind of like we've been talking about minimum 15 for so many years that if we passed it right now, we would immediately need to start talking about minimum 22. So anyway, this is the huge problem with what the Republicans and conservatives, they don't want change. They're scared of change. Anyway, getting back to on point here, I was trying to make the point that the families of some of the victims of police murder, I'm going to call it, have been talking with legislators, and it still doesn't matter. The Republicans are just like, yeah, you're the mom of the guy they killed, whatever. And they don't listen. And they seem to blatantly not listen. You're talking about Kevin McCarthy meeting with that Capitol policeman and just not giving a crap about what the guy had to say. So some of the families were there. A quote from one of them who heads up an organization: "Our families have told you what we need to heal. Our lives and our children's lives are on the line. I'm in tears right now. We come to you all and re-traumatize ourselves all to get nothing that hold these officers accountable for stealing our loved ones from us and destroying our families." She's been pushing for things like the police need to release police body camera footage to the family within 48 hours. And I just would like to ask, I feel like in the future we're going to be starting to talk about why can't you just release the body cam? I understand that you need to have an investigation, and maybe the body cam footage would hurt that if it was released to the public. Because there may be things about what's being seen here that the public doesn't understand, that investigators and policemen do. I understand that. But releasing it to the family, and maybe you can have a clause in there that says, okay, we're going to release this to the family, but we're not going to allow the family to make public statements about it until the investigation gets underway, or something like that. I just feel like, you know, people've got editing equipment. I think people are – right now we've got such a trust issue, at least going on here in Minnesota with all we've been hearing, you know, about cover-ups and the way that they depict how something happened before actual videos released about it. On the George Floyd case, they said, oh, yeah, Mr. Floyd died of a medical emergency while in custody. And then actual private video comes out from people standing on the streets videotaping it. And no, well, no, actually the guy murdered him and now he's going to jail for 22 and a half years. If the public wouldn't have been there filming that, we wouldn't even know the name Chauvin probably, you know? So that's pretty frustrating. And more things that are frustrating, House Public Safety Committee Chairman Carlos Mariani, who's a DFLer from St. Paul, he says, it's a great disappointment to me that a number of common sense proposals related to the police accountability that the politically divided legislature could not agree on. Proposals that prohibit law enforcement from affiliating with white supremacist groups. That's blocked. The Republicans would not let that happen. They're like, no! A policeman can be affiliated with any white supremacist group he wants. If he's a Nazi, we'll take him. We need guys. We love Nazis. I mean, what are they doing? Why would they block that? So anyway, I'm getting myself all worked up again. When we come back, we're going to talk about – we're going to take just a little bit of a medicine card reading on the Republicans. We'll talk about that until we get Ryan Winkler to call in, the majority leader of the House. We're hoping to hear from him to give us an update on what's going on minute by minute down at the legislature in St. Paul. I'm Todd Mickelson, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett's on the board. We'll be back in a moment. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. We're going to put off our Native American medicine card reading of the Republican Party until the next hour because we have a very welcome and unexpected call from Senator Melissa Franzen down in St. Paul. Hello, Senator.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
Good. How are you?
On a break in finance, we're waiting to continue to take up the public safety bill, as many know that is a very contentious bill right now in the Minnesota legislature. So we're continuing to wait for a few amendments that hopefully will make the bill better, but I honestly don't think it's going to get as good as we deserve in terms of the moment that we're in Minnesota and across right. our nation with police and equity.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of disappointments going on in it. I know they're eking out a little bit of money for things like investigating missing indigenous women and things like that, which are good, but it doesn't seem like enough money for that type of thing. What are – can you give us a little bit of light on what these amendments you're talking about are, one or two of them possibly?
Well, we don't know. That's what's interesting, that at this point in time, we're 2 days into a government shutdown, and there are still being negotiations behind closed doors without public input on what this bill is going to look like. And frankly, most of the budget was done in this manner, and it's unfortunate because that's not how our legislative process has worked in the past. It's not how it should work, and we're moving beyond the pandemic, so the Capitol is now open, and it's still being treated as keeping the public out of the process, which is unfortunate.
So right now, are you saying that you're waiting because the leadership is behind closed doors with the governor, or?
I know that leadership is. I don't know what leaders are involved right now. The governor had earlier today had a press conference or press release, about announcing some of his own investments in communities, about $15 million in some grants to local jurisdictions. And one of the pieces in the state bill is about innovation and community safety grants. So basically trying to put community centered response to violence. And this part has been grossly underfunded. And one of the elements that we've been told will be part of this amendment is increasing funding. It has some funding in the bill, but it shuts it down after, I believe, the second part of the biennium. So they're trying to keep it going. So it's not just innovation and community engagement for a specified period and it stops, but it should be part of how we heal and how we move out of this crisis that we are in our state. Where we have serious concerns about what public safety looks like in our communities.
Right. After the week where another police murder happened and the Chauvin case a couple of months ago, Leader Gazelka, the Republican leader, of course, for the Senate, came out and said, we're going to have hearings on public safety and police. And what happened with that? Because it actually didn't happen. Do you have any ins and outs on what was going on at that point?
Well, you know, as a leader of the majority in the Senate, you have power to bring things up at any time, and you also have the power to block it. So that's what they decided to do, is block that conversation in a committee hearing, saying that we didn't have enough time. Fast forward to now, we're in special session week two, and there still apparently is not enough time to have these discussions with the public and with public safety officials and have everybody come to the table and work these out. I think there is a path. It's just a path that the Senate Republicans refuse to take. And we see that callous response. If anyone wants to spend a few hours, just a couple hours or even a few minutes in today's discussion in our committee hearing, things were really concerning. Some of the things that we heard were really concerning about the lack of empathy for communities of color from the Republican side. If you don't know how these communities are being impacted and hurt, and you don't hear from them, how dare you say that that this bill represents what they need? And I believe that is what fundamentally is wrong with this bill. It has some good provisions. It includes funding for law enforcement, increases in their funding and base, because they are underpaid for the work that we're telling them to do. But we want to give them the resources to do that job better and to do a job that we as citizens and residents of our communities think is best for our safety and the safety of our families.
Right. And to that point, you're kind of making the point that nobody has been saying defund the police.
No one.
No, exactly. So that's not a thing. So we got to make sure everyone knows that at all times. And as a matter of fact, the DFL would like to fund things that the Republicans still, you know, well, none of it's going to raise taxes or something like that. So it's also not a one-sided thing. I was going to say at the beginning – well, I made the point right before you came on that – some of the families of the victims of these police incidents have been talking. They've been lobbying and coming to some committee hearings and telling them how they feel. And it really looks to us like you, of course, have a much more of an insight from being on the inside. It looks to us like the Republicans are exactly what you say, completely callous to them.
I believe so. Again, some of the hearings and the comments in the hearing today, we're just out of touch with what our state is asking. Actually, they try to make this issue about one single jurisdiction, Minneapolis. And we all know that the issue isn't Minneapolis. We all know the issue is that we need more resources for adequate training, for bias training, for body cam functioning, for the data to be out, real data to be allowed and used. It's not just about taking bad apples out of a profession. It's about transforming that profession to what it really should be, which is to be hand in hand with community. And it's just a missed opportunity in this day and age, in this moment in time, for our state to come together. And frankly, there's been things that the police, law enforcement side has supported that the Republicans don't want to address. They want us to fight with each other. They want to make the point want to make their point and capture or picture us as against the police. And it's nothing further than the truth. We do want to work hand in hand, but we want the community to be part of that discussion.
Right. And you can't tell me that the party that nationally won't pass for an investigation on what happened with the January 6th and won't meet with any of the Capitol policemen, you can't tell me that they're the ones who are pro-police. But
one example is the whole notion of not having police officers that are aligned or with white supremacist organizations.
Yeah.
That notion, everyone agrees with, except the Minnesota Senate Republican. The Post Board has already made it part of their function. They agree with it, so they are already implementing that. But to put it and codify and put it in law, the Republicans say that that's going too far.
Yeah. Do you can you figure out? I can't. I think you're saying you can't figure it out. You can't figure out why they're doing that, right?
Well, the only thing that that's like right smack in front is the election and power, and people will go out of their way to get power. And in this day and age, we don't need just power. We need that power to be used for good. And we're the only divided legislature in the country, and we are proving again that we can't move together because one side gets power is too strong to be. A voice for change. It just wants to be a voice for continuing the status quo, and that's not going to work in Minnesota anymore.
Yeah, and it almost seems like the Republicans are trying to keep track of what their leverage is, and they're running out of subjects. So now they're using as leverage things that everybody's against, you know, like that one. It's funny that you mentioned that because I just had a little rant about that right before you called in. About that particular measure. On the time that, you know, we're talking about the crunch time, of course, we all know that in the House, the Republicans were just making fools of themselves basically by filibustering with just telling dumb stories on the floor and things like that for the entire first week, which is basically the first half of the special session. That didn't happen so much in the Senate. Did you feel like there was wasting of time in the special session in the Senate by Republicans as well?
I absolutely do, quite frankly. This is a part-time legislature that has been on overtime for an entire year due to the pandemic. We've been doing the people's work. We've been putting our own work on hold, our own families on hold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People have made a lot of sacrifice to serve the public interest and to make sure that we have a budget for the next biennium. And we should have done that, and we could have done this in the time allotted in a regular session.
Mm-hmm.
This is just political posturing and in tactics to go against the governor because some people are running for governor, and there's just it's unneeded, and it actually costs the city and the state a lot of money to go into special session to do these bills when we could have done them all. We normally do them all in one night when they get agreed, and we get them all and we vote for them, and we have a long day or a long session of days. But 2 weeks is obviously not necessary to do this work.
Right. Yeah. Pretty incredible. This is almost like you're a reporter down there. So we're all waiting on the edge of our seats, you know.
And it's in real time because we are finding out information all the time of things that have changed and new agreements. Like I mentioned, the governor had just announced right before we went into finance committee his own proposal that the chair of the judiciary had not even seen. He actually asked me to read it, and I told him to get a copy.
Wow. Yeah. Pretty incredible.
Arrogant.
Well, listen, I should let you get back. I'm sure you're going to get called back in at any moment, but thank you so much again for your time. Senator Melissa Franzen calling in unexpectedly to give us a report on what's going on at the state legislature. Thanks again, Melissa.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
All right, you too. Let's take a break, and we'll see if we might have Ryan Winkler on the line when we come back. This is AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson. Brett's on the board, and we'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. And we have the Majority Leader of the Minnesota State House, Representative Ryan Winkler, on the line. How you doing, Representative?
Well, we are getting close to July 1, but I'm still doing okay.
Yeah, I know. We're all sitting on the edge of our seats here. We just talked to Melissa Franzen, called in. And it was almost like she was a reporter. Like, you know, I'm waiting to go back into committee, Todd. And right now they're meeting behind closed doors. And, you know, it was so everything's right up to the minute. So, what do you have to report?
We are down to our last few bills, budget bills, to close out before the end of the month. We have our public safety bill up tomorrow. We have a tax bill. We have a jobs bill that's about to finalize. And then we have a state government bill. And public safety is the big issue in front of us right now. Senate Republicans have been unwilling to do anything very meaningful on police reform and accountability. And we are in the middle of a last-minute push to see if we can find other ways of moving ahead on some of that legislation. The rest of our public safety bill is very good. It just doesn't address the core issues that are in front of us right now.
Right, and especially right now of all times after this last year. I know the it kind of looked this morning like just reading the papers and things that it was done and there was a deal made and all of this, but it still is moving. Is it not? Things are not completely worked out.
It's not done until the bill is presented to the governor for signature. Mm-hmm. And we saw today a number of amendments proposed for our bill from members of our People of Color and Indigenous Caucus, which will have a lot of support from our team. It isn't that House Democrats don't support all these changes. We do. It's that we have only so much leverage to get Senate Republicans to do anything.
Right.
And if we don't pass a public safety bill by July 1st, then the courts will start to fund prisons and the BCA and other parts of state government related to public safety. And all of the good things that we have in the bill will tend to disappear because it gets harder and harder to pass a bill with anything else in it. So we have a lot of important provisions and changes in our public safety bill now, just not what we need. And the question is, can we get more or do we risk getting nothing? And is that worth it?
Now that's a interesting insight that I hadn't really thought of, and perhaps we should all be focusing on is that a lot of the bill is good. We shouldn't just be talking about how disappointing it is. Although there is some insanely disappointing things, like, you know, why do the Republicans seem to really need police to be affiliated with white supremacist groups?
Right. I mean, fortunately. We have a regulation right now that says you can't be affiliated with a white supremacy group. What we were trying to do is put that in statute, so it would not be something that could change with a different post board.
Okay. This is very enlightening. Yeah, that's good.
There's a lot of moving pieces here.
Right. Okay. Well, this certainly informs me on how to inform our listeners more, and you're doing a lot of informing of our listeners. This is very enlightening in a positive way. I guess I didn't really realize there was already a regulation forbidding that and that we're trying to make it more solidified. So that's good news. And it kind of explains the craziness of it. almost like makes me feel better about humanity in a way. So do you feel like now things are moving as quickly as they can, or are there still stall tactics going on, even though we've only got basically two more days to get this done? Oh, are you there, Representative Winkler?
Let's see. I'll try calling.
Okay.
Nope, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
We had 3 days of filibusters from Senate Republicans, which we finally put an end to on Monday with an epic burnout by Kurt Dowd in a temper tantrum on the floor. And we haven't seen much of that since. So we're really just moving through, I think, finding agreement, figuring out what our best possible outcome is, and getting that done. It seems to be in order. I do think the next couple of days could be start and stop, and it could be a little bit noisy at the end as we get close.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I think we are on track to finish. The question really is just how much better can we make the public safety bill? One thing I want to say is that the governor today announced a number of things he is going to do, and the changes that he is talking about today with respect to state agency police are things that our House Democratic public safety team put together that he could do and urged him to do separately, so that the outcome of what the governor announced today is actually the product of our work product and negotiations and push by the people who want to see more police reform and accountability. So we already have achieved a bit more today than what we had in the bill originally. Again, it's not in statute. It's what this governor is ordering, but it's a step in the right direction.
Right. So it's like an executive order that he's thinking of doing.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So you think you're feeling pretty confident the state is not going to shut down?
Most of the state won't. I mean, the budget is, you know, the environment budget is already passed. So state parks are going to be open.
Okay.
Housing, you know, K-12, Health and Human Services, all of those things are now on their way to the governor. So if we get to the part where some parts of government don't get funded because we break down, it will be public safety related or such minor institutions as the state legislature itself.
Okay, so Minnesota Pollution Control Agency will remain open.
It will remain open. State parks will remain open, those kinds of things.
Great. My nephew, I'm sure you didn't hear the story, but my nephew was buying a house. He had it supposed to have his closing date last Wednesday, and his financier said, well, you work for the state. We got to wait and see if the state's going to shut down, so we got to change your closing date. So I know. People don't realize how widespread – it affects all Minnesotans if the government shuts down. So, I know that it's been the Republicans who've been doing this now for years. We did shut down in 2011. I think it's fair to say it's not the DFL's fault. I really feel it's fair to say that the Republicans are the ones who always put this up to the last minute and have us all on pins and needles, leading right up to, will the state shut down or will it not? It's pretty crazy.
They're pretty indifferent to government serving people. And so for them, it doesn't, you know, it's a negotiating and a stall tactic. See what they can get us to commit to and make us feel the pain, because we care a lot more about the services state government provides and the people that, are helped by it. So, yeah. they consistently do this. And it's just part of the negotiating and deal-making that we have to deal with.
Yeah, and it seems like when they're making deals, I was going to do a story later on about this whole SNAP mess that's going on with the market bucks and the SNAP benefits.
That's going to be funded.
Oh, good, good. It's still pretty maddening, though, that they're using it as leverage. And they're forgetting that these are people that are affected by this. That's I guess, the point I'm making the point you're making even, is that when they're doing this tit-for-tat, they're forgetting that it really affects real people and drives us all crazy here in Minnesota.
I've become so used to it, I don't even expect any better out of them at this point.
Yeah, well, that's – sorry to hear. You were a star in that video. You and Representative Liz Olson, maintaining your composure when Kurt Dowd was doing, as you put it, the epic burnout. I would have thrown my shoe at his ear myself, but you both maintained your cool. So congratulations on that, and thank you for all that you do down there. And I'm going to let you go because I know you're super busy, but any last words?
Well, I just think your listeners and Minnesotans pay attention, and the more people pay attention and are in touch with legislators, the better we do, including Republicans. So this isn't state government happening to you. This is the state government we create together, and I just appreciate all the support we get from so many of your listeners.
Great. Great to hear. Thank you very much. Representative Ryan Winkler on the line. We'll talk to you soon, Ryan.
Okay. Thanks, Todd.
Yep. See you later. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, bringing you up to date on the minute-by-minute goings-on down in St. Paul. Reports from two legislators there in the last half hour. So we're going to take a break, and we will be back after some news here at AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Don't forget, you can also go to am950radio.com. That's AM and then the numbers, 950radio.com. And you can get caught up on shows if you want to hear the last hour. It'll probably be posted in within the next couple of hours online at am950radio.com. And you can hear the interviews that we just did with Senator Melissa Franzen and Representative Ryan Winkler. And they were very informative made me feel a little better about what's going on. It's still atrocious in many ways with what the Republicans are doing. But the final results are Representative Winkler kind of made some things more clear as to what's going on. And we can talk a little bit more about that later or tomorrow as well. But, you know, things are constantly changing down there. So to stay on one subject for even a few minutes is like, oh, well, that was a waste of time because now the news is completely different. But I told you we were going to talk about this man a long time ago now, 20, 35 minutes ago. And then we got these interviews all of a sudden coming in unexpectedly. And but again, very enlightening. So if you want to hear those back, go to the website. By the way, you can also call in at 952-946-6205 if you have anything to say. And but we were going to talk – we were going to give a little bit of a medicine card reading, a Native American medicine card. You've heard of tarot cards. These are a Native American kind of version of a similar thing, and they're called medicine cards. I don't know much about the history of them. I don't even know if they're authentically indigenous or not. They could just be a gimmick in you know, stores that sell crystals and stuff. But I found that I learned a lot from them on myself. It was talking about the subject of, you know, you find out what animal represents different parts of you. Like there's different aspects of your personality. As far as what people think or how I interact with people, I got the skunk because some people hate me and some people love me. You don't just kind of like me. You either just love me or you just hate my guts, apparently. When it came to do with dealing with my fears, I got the rabbit. And the whole explanation of that is that you really don't need to have the fears. So you're the rabbit. Like you're the rabbit down in the field. There's kind of long grass and you're a rabbit and there's an eagle up in a tree. And of course, the eagle wants to eat the rabbit. So all of a sudden, I see the eagle and I get super scared of the eagle. But the eagle can't see me because I'm not moving. And the moment I see the eagle, I get scared of it and I try and run to cover. And then the eagle sees me and comes down and eats me. So let's do a medicine card reading on the Republican Party. And this is valid for both national and state. In the state of Minnesota, if you remember back in 2012, the Republicans got themselves so afraid of gay marriage that they wanted to put it on the amendment, make an amendment to outlaw gay marriage permanently. They wanted to put it onto the Minnesota state constitution. And nobody was talking much about it at the time. It wasn't as big a subject as you would think it would be. You know, people were – it wasn't legal to have an actual legal marriage, but, you know, a lot of gay couples were like, well, we're fine. We're still basically living like we're married, but they're missing rights, like rights perhaps when they're having an issue in the hospital and you're not the legal spouse. So, you know, they were definitely missing some major rights and it was a huge injustice. But it wasn't like the Democrats were all of a sudden really working hard on trying to get gay marriage to be legalized. I think most Democrats were like, oh, it's never going to happen right now. But then the Republicans, like the rabbit running away from the eagle, the Republicans were like, no, we're so scared of gay marriage, we have to make sure – we have to outlaw it permanently. And they basically, you know, woke up the sleeping giant and it – not only did their measure go down in flames hugely so that gay marriage was not made illegal, but within a year, gay marriage was legal. The Democrats weren't ready to have that happen, but the Republicans gave them the leverage to do it. They gave them the power to do it. They pointed it out exactly like I explained about the rabbit running away from the eagle. So gay marriage swooped down from the trees and ate them up. And now gay marriage is legal. And it happened nationally too. And so there's a lot of arguments like that. You could also make that argument about voter ID in a way. Nobody was worried about voter ID. And then the Republicans were like, we're so scared of voter ID, we have to pass a constitutional amendment to make sure everyone has a voter ID, because voter fraud, people imitating other people going in, is such a problem that we're so scared of, we have to make sure it can never happen, even though it was never happening. But they were so scared of it that they tried to push that through. And, of course, it went down in flames. They're still talking about voter ID today. And it just keeps getting all they do. People weren't thinking about how little election fraud and voting fraud there was until they started yelling about it. Now we all know what's there been like less than 3,000 in 30 years or something, cases like that. And most of those are mistakes. Might even be a less number than that. Do you remember any of that?
I just remember some of the most recent ones were Republicans trying to prove that there was voter fraud. So exactly. They committed fraud to prove that there was fraud.
Right.
Great logic.
And that, yeah, and that's basically the only voter fraud of the last election, except, of course, for, who knows what was going on with Russia and stuff like that. But which, of course, points out again – Trump is a great example of rolling things out that he's scared. It's almost like they're projecting. So when he's saying the voter fraud is it's the biggest crime in America. When he talks about stuff like that, it's because he is currently committing the biggest crime. The what's going on in the election right now in 2020 is the biggest crime ever perpetrated. I learned a new word. Yes, on the American public. Since the beginning of time, unprecedented, another new word I just learned backstage. What's going on in the election is the biggest crime ever. Because he knew, what was going on in the election was the biggest crime ever. Because he was basically colluding. I'm going to use the word because, it's been overused, but it's got meaning. He was colluding with Russia to steal the election. And then he said, I don't know how they could have beat me. It's impossible. And that's because he's saying there was so much going on with Russia interference and cheating going on that I do know about. And I was told by the people who were perpetrating all this cheating that there's no way the Democrats could have won because we had this so rigged that the Democrats could never win it. So, yeah, when he says, fraud, it's – he's waking up the wrong side of things, Now, of course, nothing's ever going to be done about any of that. You can't tell me Mitch McConnell overwhelmingly won his seat back, And there is a little bit of talk about that. Like, if we want to do an audit like they're doing in Arizona, or if we actually would like to do a real audit, why don't we audit Kentucky? What happened in Kentucky for reality? Did Mitch win? Anyway. It does go both ways like that. I understand, I can't really say that the election was the safest election ever and then turn around and say there was tons of fraud going on. But, I don't know. A lot of this doesn't make sense. Right now the Republicans are talking about critical race theory. When did you hear about that? Did you hear about that from a Democrat? Brett, do you remember the first time you heard that term?
It was, I think, from a Republican.
Yeah.
Right-wing media. Yep.
Yeah, it's like Tucker Carlson was talking about critical race theory last night. What is critical race theory? And it's not being taught in schools. Nobody was talking about it. Like I think I said last week, I heard on the radio that there was an expert on it. And she said, I hadn't heard of it until I was in graduate school. So even experts on critical race theory didn't even know about it until they were forced to become aware of it. And then she said, basically, I didn't think about it much. I learned about what it was, but I didn't think about it much because it was just this thing from like four decades ago that, we were made aware of in our studies. And then, of course, it was pointed out that, oh, it's being taught at West Point. And nobody has proven that it is being taught at West Point, first of all. But if it is, it's because it's being taught at West Point because it's a thing that happened. But it's not being taught to kids. And now everyone's talking about it. The Republicans' whole resurgence of white supremacy under the Trump whole mess that's been going on for 5 years now. Basically, Americans for the first time are learning about the Tulsa massacre. You know, I had heard about the Tulsa massacre before this last few months, but I think the first time I heard of it was maybe within, for sure, like the last 2 years. I didn't know about the Tulsa massacre, and I'm you know, kind of a history buff. Speaking of that, we're going to talk about Hawthorne. I don't know if there's some stories about people who think they're history buffs. You got to have your if you call yourself a history buff and then you try and teach other people lessons about history, you better be right on your facts. So we have a funny story that I'll try and get to later on that. But basically the Tulsa massacre, now everyone's learning about it. I think these are crucial things. You know, I think it is critical that Americans know these things. You know, the Republicans don't want us to tear down Confederate statues because they think, oh, that's part of American history. Maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe it was ugly, but we need to know about it. So don't tear those statues down. They're talking about having a statue to commemorate these people who were traitors to America. And so now they're saying, you know, of course, very hypocritically, that we don't want our kids knowing about the ugly side of America and how we treated black people. We forced them to come here in the first place, and then how we mistreated them for hundreds of years. We don't want them to know about how we mistreated the indigenous people of this land. You know, which is it? Do you want us to know about the Confederates? Or, you know, if you want us to know about the Confederates, then why do you not want us to know about the other side of it? So I think it's great that people are starting to get more and more conscious of these things. It's great that now the Tulsa massacre is, you know, so recognized. It's great that Juneteenth is a national holiday. And these are things that were not talked about a couple years ago. And because of the resurgence in white supremacy and how the Republicans are always the rabbit not being seen by the eagle, and then they get so scared that they feel like they need to do something, and then we see them, and then we know what they're talking about, and then we're watching them, and then they can't do anything. And they have unknowingly done something great for the eagle. They've given the eagle dinner that night. So anyway, enough about Native American medicine cards, but that was my take on what I think is going on with the Republican Party for many, many years now, decades actually. But let's take a break and come back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Brett is on the board. And if you want to call in, the number is 952-946-6205. We'll be back in a minute. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Out and then back in with Rosh. Canadian music's always the coolest. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Brett's on the board. I see him on the phone again. I don't know what's going on. It's been like a busy news hour kind of show going on with people unexpectedly calling in, legislators unexpectedly calling in. And things like that. Now he's on the phone again. And so why don't we go ahead? Oh, somebody wants to talk about the Native American medicine card reading on the GOP. Lynette from Chaska. Hi, Lynette.
Yeah, hi, Todd. No, I'm taking my break here, and I was listening to you, and I was writing down as much as I could hear you say. I was laughing so hard. You are so spot on. I love that. I wanted to write it down so I didn't forget. No, that's perfect. Oh, I'm just, wow, thank you.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah, I've been thinking that type of thing for years, actually, that they've been doing that. Have you?
I mean, no, they're definitely projection. Everything is projection. I have a sibling that's like that. I know everything he says that I'm going to do is what he's doing.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't like me. And he's a Republican, by the way. So, yeah, I know. Everything that they're doing, they're telling you what they're doing, and then you know what they're doing.
Yeah, we learn from them. I mean, I think the better we get the hang of it, both nationally and locally, the more we get the hang of it, I think the better that we can react, because we just, okay, you just told us what crime you're going to break next.
Psychological projection. That's what it is. They do it all the time. And you know, what you're making me think of when you were saying that is like, isn't that what the right-wing media's job is? It's like, well, let's see, what can we scare people with this week?
Yeah.
And then they just come up with endless things, and the people fall for it constantly.
Yep, yep. But they're running out of, I don't know if you agree with me, but it seems like the people who are doing that are getting to be in a smaller group all the time. I'm hoping they're going to dwindle to nothing soon.
I hope so. I hope you're right about that.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So, okay.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your call, Lynette. Pleasure talking to you.
Okay. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Yep. Bye. That was a nice call. I always get nervous when people call because they're like, you don't know what you're talking about. And speaking of that, I'm going to switch what I was saying because there's a kind of pretty hilarious I had it saved here. I'll try and find it.
And you have to work with that mouse in there, which if you try to scroll on that mouse we have in there, it'll move you down about 10 times further than you want. So
okay.
I don't envy you in there trying to navigate that.
Yeah, I thought I had it here. Hawthorne. What's his first name? I can kind of I remember he's the guy he lied about his military involvement. He's the youngest. Here I can find it. Sorry to do this to you. Okay.
Yeah, I'll look for it here too. Is it? Let's see.
Cawthorne. Yeah. C A W. Here. Anyway, well, he calls himself a history buff and. So he said he was
Madison Cawthorn.
Madison Cawthorn.
Yeah, is this the guy in North Carolina that
– Yes.
The rep, yeah, who got everything wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Now you're ringing a bell with me here. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he said he thought that the Emancipation Proclamation was voted on by Congress when I'm pretty sure anyone who knows anything about the Emancipation Proclamation that, it was signed by the – it was an executive order, basically the equivalent of the president just did it. You know, later on, the House voted in favor of, like, that they agreed with it, but it wasn't a legislative process. And he said Madison signed the Declaration of Independence. He said he was only 25 when he signed the Declaration of Independence, but he wasn't even there because he was really young. He did not sign the Declaration of – I wish I could find it. Anyway, I'm not going to do it while I don't have the details in front of me. Otherwise, I'm going to sound as much like an idiot as he does. But I did want to talk about what I mentioned when Representative Ryan Winkler was on the line. Something happened just yesterday, and Aaron Murphy writes a little bit about it. What she writes is, Senator Mary Kunish offered an amendment to secure additional federal funds available to Minnesota for SNAP benefits, which is food assistance for hungry people. The amendment proposed would help a total of 3,200 Minnesota families, not just people, but families. The cost would have been $14,000 over 2 years. That's in a $16 billion health and human services budget, $14,000. Not $14 million, $14,000 over 2 years. That's $7,000 a year to help 3,200 Minnesota families who are hungry get food assistance. So, of course, it passed, right? No. The GOP majority said no. Actually, Ryan Winkler gave us an update, but at least at first, the GOP majority in the Senate said no, immediately and decisively. They argued that it was the fault of the House because the House dropped it from their proposals. Now, that, of course, is code for we didn't get a trade for it, so we won't allow it. So basically, that's why, you know, when the DFL sees that it's absolutely impossible, they'll eventually drop it and say, okay, we're not going to do it. So then the Republicans say, no, you dropped it. It's like, no, you dropped it. But anyway, trading is a negotiating tactic that permeates the legislature. This going back to what Erin Murphy wrote. She's Senator Erin Murphy. Trading is a negotiating tactic that permeates the legislature so much so that it is the rare exception that progress occurs without an exchange. It's a fixture of the culture at the Capitol, and as in this case, it can override the judgment and humanity of some of the people elected to represent us. Senator Gazelka argued earlier this week that Minnesotans are generous, but his party is not. Because of the Senate majority, we had to fight to restore funding for Market Bucks, a successful program for SNAP benefits to be used at farmers markets across the state. And last night, in the blink of an eye, we saw the truth of the Republican ideology, that even when they can lend a hand to those in need, they choose not to. So that's written by Senator Erin Murphy. So to give you a little bit of a background, Market Bucks is this great thing that's been going on for years that uses SNAP, which is benefits to help kids eat, but it made part of the SNAP benefits be eligible at farmers markets. So you're doing two things. You're making the poor people who are hungry get better quality food because they're going to the farmers market and getting fresh food from Minnesota farmers, and then what happens when people buy food from Minnesota farmers? The Minnesota farmers make money. The Republicans hate this because it's good for people. At least that's what it looks like. In reality, I think that they're so dense and non-thinking anymore. They're just they've lost all capability of reasonable thought when it comes to legislating. They forget that there are people tied to all of this stuff. They forget that SNAP is there to help 3,200 Minnesota families, they forget people are tied to it. It's the story of my nephew, if you hadn't heard it quickly. He was supposed to have his closing date. We all know how stressful closing dates when you buy a house is. He was supposed to have it last Wednesday. He works for a Minnesota agency. So his lender called him 2 days before and said, we have to postpone your closing date because if the state closes down, then we don't know how you're going to pay for the house. It affects everybody when the Republicans are playing these stupid games. Even if the state does not close down, my nephew had his closing date completely messed up. Now he's going to have to go through that stress again. And, why Minnesota farmers, why is it thought that the Republicans are the people who help rural Minnesota? This was an easy thing that was not taking any more money from any place else. This was using SNAP funds in a very smart way, and it was working for years, and the Republicans wanted to cut funding for it. Money that goes into the pockets of Minnesota farmers. And they're the party of rural Minnesota. I think not. Anyway, so Ryan Winkler did tell us that this is going to be funded. I had heard that Market Bucks was probably going to stay in because the news got out. And this is another good thing that's happening is all of you listeners on AM 950 and all Minnesotans are paying closer attention. We're watching what's going on down there. The Republicans used to do all this stuff because nobody was watching. They used to just slip it in the dark of the night and nobody would know. Now we're watching them and they see, that Market Bucks thing. Wow, that's kind of blowing up in our face, guys. We should maybe rethink that. It seems like Minnesota people are mad at us now. So the market bucks thing got saved a couple of weeks ago. If I was understanding Representative Winkler correctly, this new amendment that Senator Mary Kunish put in that would make a few SNAP benefits especially help these certain hungry people, you know, costing $14,000, you know, I know people who could fund that out of their – wouldn't think twice about funding that out of their pocket, you know. Anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll get into a really esoteric kind of thing about accountability, and we'll do one of our one of my deep history dives perhaps. We'll attempt to do that. See how it goes when we come back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson on guitar. Brett's on bass on this song. He's on the board, actually, and I'm here speaking into the microphone. I'm sitting in for Matt McNeil. He'll be back on Thursday, the 1st, and see what he gets to talk about, whether or not the state shuts down the night before. So that'll be interesting. Every day is going to be interesting for this week here in Minnesota. I did find that Madison Cawthorn thing. He's 25 years old himself. He's the youngest person in Congress right now. And he keeps trying to show off that he knows a lot about history, calls himself a history buff, but he keeps getting things wrong. He attributed a very famous quote. He attributed it to Thomas Jefferson, the one that says facts are stubborn things. That was actually John Adams. And this is so famous that even if you're not a history buff, you kind of knew it was John Adams. I don't know. There was the John Adams miniseries, and it was, you know, I mean, so if you watch a lot of TV, if you're a history buff, you would watch the John Adams miniseries, and you would know that it was John Adams. He said it in 1770 when he was the defense lawyer of the British soldiers who were charged in the Boston Massacre murders. It was a longer quote than that. It doesn't really matter. Facts are stubborn things was the main part of it. And I already said he thought the Emancipation Proclamation was a vote in Congress, which, of course, it wasn't. It was Nixon just issued it himself. James Madison did not sign the Declaration of Independence. Cawthorn says, you know, I'm so proud of him because he was my age. He was 25 years old when he signed the Declaration of Independence. James Madison was nowhere near the Declaration of Independence. So anyway, if you're going to call yourself a history buff, you should probably try and get some of that stuff right. I noticed a couple of very recent things, too. Here's a great quote from Ted. I don't know who he is, and he's not using any facts. He just gave a very good quote here. The Texas power grid illustrates the Republican way perfectly. Create an ineffective solution. Privatize profits. Share them with corrupt GOP politicians and force the public to pay for it. Another interesting tidbit from today is it sounds like this whole thing about the U.S. Catholic bishops were saying that they were not going to give President Biden what is it called when you do that in church?
Communion.
Yeah, communion. I don't know why I couldn't think of that word. They were going to take that away from him, and I assume his wife as well. Biden, a long time, you know, lifelong devout Catholic, and the bishops were saying, no, we're going to take it away from anybody who is anti-choice or who is not anti-choice, and that includes the president. Well, that's backfiring on them pretty bad, I guess, last week, so they're likely going to change their mind on that. Another thing from Jim Daveney, Representative Jim Daveney, in this year's K-12, this is a Minnesota thing, and I'm sorry, I for a second I was thinking, no, he's not a senator. Yeah, he's in the House. And he says, in this year's K-12 education bill, we tried to secure funding to train and support teachers in dealing with students who have experienced trauma. The Senate GOP would have none of it, and we dropped it. Frustrating when you know you can positively impact a kid with a little help. So very disappointing. Another very disappointing about the behavior of the Minnesota GOP. I was going to say a few things and do another quick historical dive. When we're talking about accountability and we're talking about where we are with the former President Trump and his many crimes. Oh, by the way, another new thing is that it was again came out, but we already knew this like 2 years ago. But Ivanka Trump perjured herself when she was giving a deposition in the investigation on the inaugural. She said in her deposition that she had nothing to do with it nothing to do with the planning, but she in fact did. And there are a lot of records that show that. So at the very least, she's perjured herself. The whole Trump family, certainly the Trump organization is likely to actually be incriminated this week, possibly tomorrow. It sounds like because of the deadline for the Trump lawyers to plead as to why not to do this was today. And, They didn't make the deadline. But this happens when there's no accountability. I'm reading this book right now, Zero Fail. It's written by Carol Leoning, and it's a really fun to read book. It's about the Secret Service, and it's a deep dive. And I looked into a lot of things about the Nixon administration and. Pretty unbelievable moments about, when he was in his really days when he was likely going to get in huge trouble for Watergate. He was drinking a lot and he was, it came out years later. Well, it actually came out back then in the transcripts. When he first saw the transcripts of the tapes, he said, I didn't say that, because he didn't want his mom to see that he swore so much. So he wanted – the redactions that he wanted was, the little swear words here and there, like the S word and the GD. I think you can say that on, you can say damn and you can say God. Can you say them together? I don't know. But it's hard to imitate Richard Nixon without just, throwing out a bunch of expletive deleteds. But there's a part of this in how he handled the Secret Service that blew my mind. See if it sounds familiar. First of all, he wanted the Secret Service. So Wallace, George Wallace, he was shot in 1972. He's famous for being the Alabama governor standing in the doorway not letting black kids into the schools. So he was always known as the segregationist and very, obviously Southern racist. But he was a Democrat, that's – still, there were still a lot of the Dixiecrats back then, left over from the Civil War, basically the conservative racists, but they were Democrats from the South. And he was running for president in 1972. It was during the primary season. It was in May, so he was going up against a few other Democrats. And in a parking lot, he was shot basically just by a crazy person. It wasn't there was really no conspiracy. It was just this crazy person who admitted everything. It was more like a John Hinckley, who shot Reagan, who wanted to impress Jodie Foster. That's the only reason he shot Reagan. So it wasn't like a JFK mystery assassination attempt. Anyway, George Wallace gets shot. Nixon hears about it, and his first idea is we should put Secret Service on Ted Kennedy, and then they can watch him, and they can report to me what he's doing, because I know he's seeing that woman. So he thought – that was his first idea that he had when he heard that George Wallace was shot. The second idea he had was we need to make sure that this shooter does not turn out to be like a conservative Nixon guy. So can we get some stories out there? I want to get some stories out there saying that he's connected to the other campaigns, the other Democratic campaigns, and things like that. He wanted to get false stories out, and his people, Ehrlichman and all these guys, You ever notice how all the weird names Nixon had under, you know, Haldeman, get Ehrlichman in here. Is he here? Yeah, get Ehrlichman. And who's named Ehrlichman?
You kind of just make fun names to yell, Ehrlichman.
Yeah, it's almost like it was a fiction story written with freaky names that you've never heard of before or since. Because it does sound funny when he says it. But anyway, so he's trying to get these guys to put false stories in. He even says to – then Colson. He wanted to get some things planted in the guy's apartment. Wouldn't it be great if we could plant some evidence in his apartment? So Colson actually calls E. Howard Hunt, who you've maybe he was one of the guys who broke into the Watergate about a month after this. They tried to get Howard Hunt to break into the crazy guy who shot Wallace, tried to get him to break into his apartment and plant some political stuff to try and make it so that he was, a left-wing freak and all this stuff. Who does that sound like? Who does that remind you of? There was an incredible incident that happened that also reminds you of Trump. We got to take a break, though. I'm realizing there's not really enough time. We'll see. I'll continue this when we come back and see how far we can get into it. But it's some fascinating stuff that's interesting to hear now in retrospect after all that's happened in the last 5 years. But if you'd like me to take a minute to take a call from you, 952-946-6205. And this is AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. We'll be right back. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. Brett Johnson on the board doing the music. And I was talking about how crazy Nixon was. We all knew he was crazy and stuff and paranoid and all of these things. But so just to continue on the story, when he was working with the Secret Service, he didn't like the head of the Secret Service, so he wanted somebody else installed. Who does that sound like? He was telling Haldeman to get somebody, I want one who's our boy. I'm not going to screw around on this score. That's an actual quote. So they installed a guy he didn't become the full head of the Secret Service. The Secret Service kind of squelched it because they knew, we're not going to do this. This is, practically against the law. There's an incident where then he and his aides tried to get protesters. They tried to make it look like the protesters were worse than they were. He suggested bringing in fake protesters to heckle him at a rally that he was having in San Jose, along with Ronald Reagan, who was the governor of California at the time. He was there kind of to try and help Ronald Reagan. And he wanted, kind of like what they're saying, let's bring in some fake Antifa people. It's very similar to that. Nixon tried to do that. The protesters were having a peaceful protest outside. He went outside and he saw that he was in the middle of them. So he got up on the hood of his limousine and tried to taunt them by giving them his victory, thing with his fingers he used to do. And they did plant stories in the newspapers that there were rocks thrown and things like that that made it into a couple of the local newspapers. All the people that were at the actual incident were like, what? This didn't happen. There was a Secret Service guy had to stop one of Nixon's aides who took a sledgehammer to the side of the limousine. And the Secret Service guy was like, what are you doing? And he said, we have to show damage because, we want it to look like these protesters got out of hand. I want to damage the car. And the Secret Service guy stopped him and said, that's government property. You can't do that. That's the taxpayer's car. So I guess he unsuccessfully tried to smash up the presidential limousine. These are things that Nixon was trying to do. Who does that sound like? Now, what happened with Nixon was he ended up getting completely, basically convicted by the congressional committees. And he was, it was plain to see that he was going to be impeached by the House and then that would go through in the Senate and he would be found guilty and he would have been, completely impeached. And in order to avoid that, he resigned. And But the thing that happened after that, he was supposed to go to jail for – he was up on about five different major criminal counts that he could have gone to jail for any one or more of those. But Ford, his newly installed vice president – by the way, Ford was never elected. He was installed after Nixon's first vice president was had to step down for fraud. And who does that all sound like, you know? So Ford pardons Nixon. Nixon thinks, oh, well, if president does it, it's legal. He said that on TV afterwards. And so Nixon thought he was exonerated. He thought he could just, and, you know, so he gets to go walk on the beach in California the rest of his life. Then Reagan becomes president by cheating on to get in, making a deal with the Iranians. And then he goes through the whole Iran-Contra crime. And then you got GW lying us into a war. And, you know, all these things keep happening. It leads all the way to Trump, and it's because of the lack of accountability. Nixon should not have been pardoned. If he would not have been pardoned, I think there's a very good argument that Reagan might not have been able to become president because he would not have been bold enough to do – or his people, rather. They would not have been bold enough to do this. You know, his vice president would have – you know, it was Bush Sr. and not gonna do it. It's illegal. It's illegal. Not gonna do it. But it wasn't illegal because you just get pardoned. So they just all started committing crimes as presidents, you know. So that's what the GOP's been doing for 50 years. Just it's fine. I've got this power now. I can commit crimes. As a matter of fact, the more crimes I commit, you know, Reagan, he had a whole bunch of hubbub because he only created that one really huge crime. Trump is like, let's just do about 97 crimes, blatant crimes. They can't get us for all of them. And so we'll get away with at least 96 of them. It seems like, you know, that's the MO of the GOP, who shouldn't be called the GOP anymore. People are talking about GQP or maybe greedy old party. Anyway, they're not what they used to be. And even what they used to be was – not the more we find out about it, it's been a really horrible thing for decades and decades. I really think the last legitimate good Republican in office was Eisenhower. He didn't cheat to become president. He did some very good things for the country. He cared about what is good for the country. He tried to warn the country of things he thought was bad. When's the last time a Republican president has done that? Anyway, so we're just about out of time. It's been a pleasure doing this for you. It was a pleasure listening to the interviews with Representative Ryan Winkler and Senator Melissa Franzen. If you want to listen, you can find those at am950radio.com. They'll be up on there fairly soon. And if you want to go back and listen to that or any other of past AM950 shows, Brett Johnson on the board. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil, who will be back on Thursday. I'm back in tomorrow, Wednesday. Brett's in tomorrow. We'll see you Wednesday. Thank you.